Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am Yanim. We're talking here about what's happened to America. Scott has a clip that is from a cable television show. Okay, HBO Newsroom is the name of the show. And to set it all up, the nature of this is that panel of three people are being asked, well, what makes America the greatest country? And an educator babbled on about because we do wonderful things, and of course couldn't name one. Then somebody else comes out and said, because we're free. We don't happen to be, when the Heritage Foundation and others now list freedom in countries, we don't make the top 10 list anymore. He continued to, as I understand it, the moderator here continued to say, no, I want a real answer. You claim that America is the greatest country. We hear that all the time. We're told that constantly, that America is the greatest country. Well, what is it? You know that America is not even the top economy in the world anymore. We're not nowhere close to the top manufacturing country in the world anymore. The things that we're best at are things you don't want to be best at. We have more debt than any other country in the world. For example, we incarcerate more of our people than any other country in the world. We're the largest consumer of illegal drugs of any country in the world. We're the largest police force of any country in the world, the largest prison system of any country in the world. But let's play some of this clip because the moderator makes some good points. Go ahead, Scott.
You're going to tell students that America is so star-spangled awesome that we're the only ones in the world who have freedom? Canada has freedom. Japan has freedom. The UK, France, Italy, Germany, Spain, Australia, Belgium has freedom. So 207 sovereign states in the world, like 180 of them have freedom.
All right.
And yet you, sorority girl, just in case you accidentally wander into a voting booth one day, there's some things you should know. And one of them is there is absolutely no evidence to support the statement that we're the greatest country in the world. We're 7th in literacy, 27th in math, 22nd in science, 49th in life expectancy, 178th in infant mortality, 3rd in median household income, number 4 in labor force, and number 4 in exports. We lead the world in only three categories. Number of incarcerated citizens per capita, number of adults who believe angels are real, and defense spending, where we spend more than the next 26 countries combined, 25 of whom are allies. Now, none of this is the fault of a 20-year-old college student, but you nonetheless are, without a doubt, a member of the worst period generation period ever, period. So when you ask what makes us the greatest country in the world, I don't know what you're talking about. Yosemite?
Sure used to be.
Wow. We're going to return to that in a moment, but I want to have a comment or two. We lead the world in more categories than that. We outspy the rest of the world combined. Our NSA and CIA spend more money trying to invade people's privacy than the rest of the company, the rest of the world combined. When you add our spine, which is part of our Defense Department, to our military, we're not just outspending the rest of the world's top 27 countries combined. We're outspending the entire rest of the world combined. We are the militants of the world. And no one even close to us. There's no one even within 10% of us in terms of being the militants of the world. We also lead the world in the arms trade. There would be no carnage of any significance in Syria if it wasn't for us providing weapons. We provide the weapons for the Egyptians to oppress their people. We provided the weapons for Libya to go from being a dictatorial regime with issues to being nothing but a terrorist state. We provide the weapons.
At the very least, if we didn't provide the weapons, we could at least then try and take a moral stance on things.
Yes.
And say, if we didn't...
If we didn't supply the weapons, then maybe we'd have a moral argument against Russia.
Yeah, because then we could say, these people that are supplying weapons, look, you can't do that. You're making things worse here.
Right.
But we don't, and we can't.
No.
We can't.
No. Well, we are the most impoverished nation on earth. And that is not something to be proud of. I mean, it's not even close. I mean, if you were to take the most in debt nations on earth, the next 10, and combine them, you don't even get close to the American debt.
Is that due to our outrageous spending compared to the rest of the world on our
Absolutely.
Military?
Absolutely. well, military is part of it, sure. But the broken, nationalized healthcare system of Medicare and Medicaid is a huge part of it. The pyramid scheme, the Ponzi scheme known as Social Security, is a huge part of it. And all the while, the very things that America should be spending money on, like maintaining our infrastructure, we don't. We not only can't build anything new, we can't even maintain what we previously had. Now, this fellow's going to go in and talk about the contrast between America as it once was and America as it is. I think he's certainly exaggerating and creating an artificial perspective on what America was, but the contrast is still remarkable, and so it's worth listening to. So let's listen to him talk about what the nation once was and what it has become. Because I like the contrast he's making here, and it's vivid and it's stark. The sorority girl does not represent the worst generation. It's our parents, and they were the ones who were part of the transition. And you have to go back to the Woodrow Wilsons and the Franklin Delano Roosevelts, and the Eisenhowers. These were the men, the Lyndon Baines Johnson. These were the men that began the process of destroying what others had built. Let's listen.
Sure used to be. We stood up for what was right. We fought for moral reasons. We passed laws, struck down laws for moral reasons. We waged wars on poverty, not poor people. We sacrificed. We cared about our neighbors. We put our money where our mouths were, and we never beat our chests. We built great big things, made ungodly technological advances, explored the universe, cured disease, and we cultivated the world's greatest artists and the world's greatest economy. We reached for the stars. Acted like men. We aspired to intelligence. We didn't belittle it. It didn't make us feel inferior. We didn't identify ourselves by who we voted for in the last election, and we didn't scare so easy. We were able to be all these things and do all these things because we were informed by great men, men who were revered. First step in solving any problem is recognizing there is one. America is not the greatest country in the world anymore.
I would challenge what he said in two ways. One, I've already mentioned. That is a revisionist view of America. It makes for a nice contrast. But America was racist. America was militant. We perpetrated more terror during that period than any other nation.
Still do.
Now, beyond that, while the first step to solving a problem is recognizing that you have a problem, I talk about that in religion all the time. Until you're able to recognize that Christianity is that it's counterproductive and God hates it, then you aren't going to engage in the process of solution, of correction. Until you recognize you ought not be voting, that you ought not be patriotic, that you ought not be political, that your country is way too far gone to save, then you can't deal with the issues in your own life to resolve them and to individually, for yourself and for your family, start walking on a path that will lead to something worthwhile. But there is something else regarding solutions that we try to emphasize on this program. Yes, you do have to acknowledge, for example, that we're fighting on both sides in the war in Iraq and Syria. On one side, we're on the side of the Shias, the other side we're on the side of the Sunnis, and so we are literally fighting against ourselves and militarizing the entire mess. So understanding that, and understanding that we're lying about the cause of the problem, which is a religious divide between Sunni and Shia Islam, recognizing that, yeah, will go a long way. But you really need to get into what is the cause and what is the consequence. You have to go one step back beyond the fact, yes, we have a problem, to understand how we got to this problem if you want to solve it. You know, for example, in Syria, we invaded Iraq on a pile of lies. We broke the country. We empowered Iran. We fundamentally changed the Muslim world. And then we provided an ungodly amount of weapons. And all the while, we lied while praising the religion that was responsible for the very carnage that we sought to cease. Cause and effect. You have to understand that as well. But before all of that, you have to realize, how did you get into the mess that you don't understand cause and effect anymore? That you don't even recognize there's a problem. How did we get to this position? And I would tell you that it has to do with the fact that we haven't taught students in this country for a very long time. We indoctrinate. We don't teach anymore. Very few people are willing or able to investigate any issue and to exercise discretion, good judgment, regarding the evidence that can be learned.
In the clip, the line that gets me the most is when he says, we aspire to intelligence. We didn't belittle it. And that's
true. Today we belittle it.
You do, because you have No Kid Left Behind and all these other things that your common core. You got to let your smartest kids be smart, you know, and we don't do that.
Yeah. We'll talk about the criticisms of this program and of the books that I have written trying to share what Yahweh has shared with us. And that criticism is the belittling of intelligence. We'll be back. I shared with our listeners yesterday, but it bears repeating, that received a series of emails from an individual that I've actually come to like. I think it's a fellow that is coming out of religion and is trying to focus on the right things and has had we all have some stutter steps in the initial process, and this individual has certainly had his. And he wrote me in this first letter, he says, I want to know who it is that I'm, books I'm reading. And I said, I'm irrelevant. you're not reading my words, you're reading what Yahweh had to say. All I'm trying to do is not only translate them completely and accurately for you, but I'm providing you with the words themselves so you can verify them for yourselves. And in the commentary, the majority of my commentary is to say, here's some of the history of the word. Here's some of the nuances as it relates to the conjugations and the stems and the moods of these words. And here's the actionable form of the word. And here's other related words. And here's how Yahweh used this word in another place. So you come to understand the whole process of learning, of knowing. And then I'll do my best to make connections so that you understand the relationship between the thing that he's saying here and the thing that he said just a moment earlier or later. The promise, the fulfillment, what it means to us. And so that is the basis of those books. And so it's not about me. My identity is meaningless, what I told him. And if you don't go into it just for the joy of learning, you ought not do it. And and that we ought not seek to establish credentials. But then he says, but I want your response to the arguments that are brought against you. He says, I said, I searched the antagonists of which you have written, of which there are probably tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands. And as it relates to yadaya.com, introtogod.org, questioningpaul.com, he said the preponderance of the critics said that I was overemphasizing knowing, and that since God is all merciful, knowing can't be a criterion for forming a relationship with him or being saved by him, because if that was the case, then there would be lots of people during long swaths of time who would not have had any access to knowing, who would not have received his mercy. Therefore, knowing can't be a prerequisite, can't be a requirement, can't be important, can't be part of one's salvation. Well, knowing and intelligence and understanding are all related concepts. Now, Yahweh happens to be take the position that I take. So I take it. He says unequivocally that the Torah is easy to understand and that it is the source of salvation and restoration for the open-minded. Yahweh tells us hundreds and hundreds of times to observe, which is to closely examine and carefully consider his testimony. He encourages us to listen to his teaching. He even says through his prophet Hosea, that people are destroyed because they're ignorant, because they don't bother to know. And they've been destroyed for a very long time for that very reason. Now, I'm telling you, folks, that if you want to go through life ignorant of these things, if you just don't want to have to deal with the fact that your government is corrupt, that it's counterproductive, that you ought not be patriotic, you ought not take off your hat and sing the national anthem, you ought not pledge allegiance to the flag, you ought not vote, that you ought not support your military, that you ought to realize that this country is badly broken, it cannot be fixed, and that there's a reason that Yahweh asked you to walk away from your country. That's why we tell these stories. That's why we try to provide this information. It's to help you understand that there is a reason that God asked us as the prerequisite for the covenant to walk away from your country, from politics, and from your society, from religion. Walk away from Babylon. Folks, if you want to know God, if you want to engage in a relationship with him, if you want an answer to all that plagues these human institutions, there's only one way to find it, and that is to search Yahweh's Torah, to come to know who he is, to come to understand what he's offering. Are you willing to invest the time? Your Agnes King, who is an independent. I guess he's capable of saying something rational here because he's not trying to defend the Bush administration. Senator Agnes King, an independent, told CNN, releasing the report on the malfeasance of the American CIA, the hideous behavior, reprehensible, disgusting, immoral, just perverted behavior of the CIA, was important. And this is not something that a rogue agent did. This came right from the top. It was such that if you're part of the CIA, you should resign. And if you were a leader in the CIA or involved in any of this, you should be incarcerated. Caliber. The release of the report was important because it could persuade a future president not to use these techniques. What he's inferring here is that what I think any rational person has come to realize. George Bush influenced partially by Dick Cheney, partially by Condoleezza Rice, partially by Colin Powell, made the decision to perpetrate these acts. He said, we did things that we tried Japanese soldiers for war crimes for after World War II. Yeah, we not only tried the Japanese soldiers for war crimes, for doing the same kinds of things, and we tried German officers for war crimes, for doing these very same things. And we convicted them, and we killed them. We tried them, we convicted them, we killed them for doing these same kinds of things. He said, this is not America. I beg to differ. It is America. It's what's happened to America. There was a consequence of indoctrinating generations. There's a consequence of political correctness. There's a consequence of having the unions in control of America's educational system. This is that consequence. This is what America has become. This was America. This is America. That's the problem, Senator. He says, this is not who we are. Absolutely, it's who we are. It's what we've become. It's what we've done to ourselves. He says, what was done has diminished our stature and inflamed terrorists around the world. There's no such thing as a terrorist, Senator. Terrorism is a tactic. There is no one in the world who identifies themselves as a terrorist. Terrorism is simply a tactic, sir. It should have inflamed Muslims around the world. And you know what Muslims are going to do in response to this? They're going to kidnap and incarcerate ever more Americans. And then they're going to inflict these very same tortures on Americans. And they're going to record them. And then they're going to show them to us. That's what's going to happen. That was a consequence of doing this. It was counterproductive. But it inflamed Muslims around the world. It causes them to be able to recruit far more mujahideen. It causes those Muslims who may have been on the edge as to whether or not they should become a jihadist. And it will move them to become jihadists. It's like the myth of the sinking of the Lusitania. Motivated Americans to join what was a horrible political and financial crisis that was called World War I. It's how the Gulf of Tonkin incident or the sinking of the Maine inflamed passions and caused Americans to say, let's go to war. Well, it's doing the same thing now for Muslims around the world. Because we did this to Muslims. Of course it diminished our stature. But our stature around the world has been diminished already. Americans consider America the world's greatest country, but nobody else does. He said, did we torture people? Yes. Did it work? No. The 500-page report that the Intelligence Committee has prepared for release is a summary of a much more detailed 6,000-page narrative, which will remain secret because it's the information in it is far worse. It's not going to remain secret because there's national security implications. No, it's because it's embarrassing. Because it's incriminating. It includes a 200-page narrative of the interrogation program's history and 20 case studies of the interrogations of specific detainees. As I shared earlier, the Germans and the Islamic State document their torturous acts just as we have done. The Romans document it too, inscribing it in stone on monuments throughout their conquered regions. It is who we were. It is what we have become. I also want to share with you that having listened to the protestations of the immoral moron that was head of the CIA during this time as he spoke from Newport Beach, and then I listened to much of what John McCain said trying to justify the use of torture, that torture destroys the victims and the victimizers. Both lose all touch with reality. From Rice, Condoleezza Rice, to Colin Powell. From George Bush to Dick Cheney. From director to persecutor in the CIA. All of them must be indicted, must be prosecuted, must be exposed, must be condemned, must be incarcerated, must be held accountable. If America is to have any hope in just this small area of being credible, of being moral, of being responsible, of being sorry. I'm going to linger here a little bit longer on some of the things that are in the report because I really want it to sink in. It's as I have urged Americans for these past 3 years to open your eyes, to open your mind, to look at the most hideous things square on. Don't turn. You need to look at an Islamic decapitation and how they do it. You need to actually look in the face of those that Muslims have sold into slavery, or the little girls that Muslims have sexually mutilated their genitals. You need to face this stuff. You need to look directly at Abu Ghraib and see what we did there. And how all of that is being manifest in far worse situations around the world at the hands of America's White House, Congress, Senate, and intelligence agencies. You need to look at it. You know, when the video was released of the American attack helicopter murdering 11 civilians, and giddy at the process of murdering civilians. You need to watch it. This is stuff we need to deal with until you can face it and recognize how big the problem is, how wrong we are. And you don't have the motivation to deal with the problem. I mean, who's going to stand up to Islam unless you know what Islam does? Who's going to stand up to our government unless you know what our government does? Many of the detainees, including Sheikh Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who, by the way, was not the mastermind for 9/11. We had the mastermind of 9/11 incarcerated at the time that 9/11 was perpetrated. His name is Ramzi Youssef. We talked about him on many programs. Also, Abu, which is a name of endearment. Zubaydah underwent rectal rehydration, rectal fluid resuscitation. We were fixated on the rectum. It tells you something about these perpetrators, Americans. And detainee Majid Clients. Lunch tray consisting of hummus, pasta with sauce, nuts, and raisins, which was pureed and then rectally infused. One detainee that is itemized in this summary spent 266 hours in a coffin. We put him in a coffin for 266 offers. We buried him alive.
Sounds like it'd be pretty terrifying.
29 hours he spent in a box that was 21 inches wide, 2.5 feet deep, and 2.5 feet tall. We did this. It was us. This is what we have become. Another man was placed in complete isolation for 47 days, which would drive any human crazy. And he was, during that isolation, or after that isolation, he was waterboarded to the point that he cried, begged, pleaded, whimpered, as he denied having any information. He would have said anything to stop the agony. I mean, waterboarding is drowning. You drown a person over and over and over again. He became completely unresponsive, bubbles rising through his open mouth. Even after the interrogation team told CIA staffers and leaders at headquarters that it is highly unlikely that this individual or any other had information that they were looking for, the interrogators continued to torture them. They coughed, they vomited, they had spasms. That's what we have become. Deal with it, America. CIA threatened many of their detainees with the promise that if they didn't cough up what they wanted to hear, that they would go and abuse their families. The CIA specifically threatened to rape the mother of one of the detainees, and after raping the mother, to slit her throat. We have Glenn on the line. I'd love to have Glenn's perspective on all of this. What do you think about your country, Glenn?
Well, yeah, at this point, it seems to me that the last time America fought a war that represented an existential threat to its existence was the War of 1812. Mm-hmm. And through the remainder of the 1800s, the Civil War, which involved centralization of power in the hands of the federal government and diminishing of states' rights.
Correct.
And then by the time Woodrow Wilson inked the Federal Reserve Act, and since then, America has functioned pretty much as a mercenary entity for the globalist bankers.
To a large extent, that's true. I don't think it explains everything, but there's certainly a thread of truth to that. But the fact of the matter is that we've become the most belligerent nation on earth. It should not be surprising to anyone that Yahweh chose of all nations on earth to pick only one nation in the last days to call out and to condemn. America. I mean, there we are in the middle of the onslaught that is taking place in Syria right now, and Yahweh talking about that onslaught that's taking place in Syria and how it leading to America's decision that Israel needs to be thinned at the waist and that it needs to give up the West Bank, and then to Yahweh absolutely lambasting America. We shouldn't be surprised.
I'm guessing that a lot of people, scholars and such through the ages, have misconstrued that nation as the Roman Empire, you know, and as opposed to America. But obviously, in historical context, that doesn't really fit. Now, America certainly has inherited aspects of the imperial nature of Rome and emulates those, but it is certainly by now its own entity.
Yeah, and Isaiah never, Yashayah never speaks of Rome. The Roman Empire is exposed and condemned in Daniel. And there it's presented as the fourth beast, rising up after the Babylonian, Assyrian, Persian beast rising up as, you know, Babylon transitions to Persia and the Persian Medes, and then, you know, it coming under attack by and the beastly nature of Macedonia and Greece under Alexandria, which is a hideous story. And then ultimately the rise of the Roman Empire, which becomes the most ruthless of all beasts. And then Yahweh says, but the beast of Rome doesn't die. It actually influences the entire world through the end of time. And I think an argument can be made that while the principal application, the principal identity of the ongoing beast that has so trodden the world underfoot is the Roman Catholic Church and Christianity, to a large degree, it's also America. We are the country that has embodied, we embody what Rome was.
Right. Well, it's no coincidence that we have, all the Roman domes and arches in D.C. We have, fasces on either side of the podium in the House of Representatives, and they meet on Capitol Hill, and the Roman Senate and on Capitol Hill. That's not a coincidence.
Right. Or that it's the Senate that was given oversight and now has released this report. There's only one Senate in history other than America. It's Rome.
And it's the Senate that ratifies international treaties.
Yeah, it's interesting, by the way, too, that as it relates to America playing the role of Rome, and your mention of the how the Woodrow Wilson's enactment of 1913 of the Federal Reserve and how America has become a mercenary for the banking interests of the world. Do you know that Rome was a highly caste country, and the senators were all members of the patrician class, and they were the bankers, they were the traders, they were the royalty of Rome, and that everything that was done in Rome was done on behalf of the financiers. Just like America. Great comments, Glenn. Yep. Stay with us, Glenn, if you have the opportunity. I know you've been busy, and we're going to have the break, but I enjoy your comments. I'm glad to hear from you. We'll be back.